Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Chico author Emily Gallo has written 9 novels and several screenplays. In February 2021, she traveled with her son to pick up her granddaughter, born to a surrogate in Ukraine. Her latest book is fiction based on a true story. Out of Ukraine is based more on stories of other people who were in Ukraine in February 2022 when the war began. Emily Gallo, welcome.
Hi, Nancy.
Now, you have a main character that I keep having to remind myself, no, this is not Emily. This is her character that she's written about, because things like this character writes in her favorite coffee shop. While she doesn't drink coffee, she drinks Earl Grey. Does that sound familiar?
That sounds very familiar. All my books written at Tin Roof Cafe here in Chico.
And speaking of Tin Roof, the cover of your book is lovely. And where did the cover of this book come from?
Well, I was trying to decide how to do it, and I knew that one of the baristas at Tin Roof is art and photography and really very talented. So I asked her if she would make the cover for me, and we talked about it, obviously. I showed her what I thought would be good, and she did a great job. In fact, I think it might win some award. And
oh, how nice.
For the cover. We'll see. It's well, in the running right now.
Yeah, so you might describe the cover for listeners.
Well, it's the Ukraine flag, blue and yellow, and it has a baby and a hand under the baby, but not even touching it. A drawing, not an actual picture of the baby. I thought that was, I liked that little.
It's thing. A sketch.
Yeah.
My guest is Emily Gallo, and she has written a book that is a novel out of Ukraine, but there is so much truth in this novel.
You know, you say that about, you know, you recognize me as the character Abby. But what was really interesting was when I, because rereading it and editing and everything and seeing how I wrote the dialogue with my son, that is so right on the kind of dialogue that my son and I have with each other.
Well, do you know, I did wonder about that because he's rather snappy.
Yeah.
This character in the book is named Eric, well, and he snaps at his mother. But
he is the most loving, incredible son and father to the baby that we picked up.
Well, I thought that was a realistic touch because this son is lovable, but he talks to his mother like that?
Well, I talk back to him pretty much, too.
So your book takes place in after you actually went with your son.
Yeah, when I decided to write this, you know, my son's name is Chris, by the way, not Eric. Chris and I talked about it, and, you know, first of all, I want to make sure that he was comfortable with me writing it. And then we talked about it and said, you know, what would really be amazing would be if you could write it as if it was a year later. So we actually went in February of 2021 to pick up JoJo, my granddaughter. But I wrote it as if it was 2022 when the war started.
Well, why did you have your characters choose to have a baby, a surrogate, in Ukraine?
Money. I mean, it certainly would have been a lot easier to do it here in America, but at that time, and I'm sure it's even more expensive now, it was about $100,000 to do surrogacy in the United States, and it was about $30,000 or $35,000 to do it in Ukraine. There were other choices, which I write about in the book, like Colombia and Mexico. And
I was also surprised that there are some countries that do not allow surrogacy.
Right, right. No, it's all very, you know, I mean, obviously I did a lot of research for this book, and it's fascinating how, and even states that don't do it here in America.
Yeah, so I learned a lot in your book, and one of the things was the fact that Europe, Canada, Australia do not allow surrogacy, and that, of course, and you say it was a lot less expensive in Ukraine.
Right.
So
Other thing about Ukraine is that the baby, after the baby's born, it's yours. I mean, some of the countries that do it, you have to adopt your own baby.
Oh. It's, even though it, the sperm and egg from the mother and father, they have to adopt a child made from their own. Well, the couple that want to find a surrogate, that wasn't the first thing they investigated.
No, no. Well, they actually had a child. Now, that's not actually true. I just want to make sure that's clear about my son and his wife. But in the book, you were mentioning I take characters from other books. Yeah.
And you tell us in the book that they checked out fertility centers first.
Right.
Yeah. Why don't you read that paragraph?
There were several fertility centers in the San Francisco area with varying success rates and varying costs. Most of them hovered in the 20 to 35% rate of success for a woman just over 40 using non-donor eggs, and that was about the national average. That was a bit of a letdown. Heather wrote down the name of two that had rates over 35%. The costs also differed widely, ranging from $8,000 to $35,000, although there were ways to cut costs. Some of them required taking more medication than others, and the medication was a few thousand on top of the cost of the procedure itself. And all of that is before the cost of surrogacy, which is the most expensive part of the process. She even looked at a few clinics in Southern California near where her parents lived. She could conceivably go to one there and stay at her parents' house during the 2 to 3 weeks for the procedure, if she found one down there with a high success rate. That evening, they sat over dinner discussing the pros and cons. "I didn't realize the success rates were so low," Eric said. Heather frowned. "I guess some people have to do it more than once. The one near my parents uses a bit of a different protocol, and they use less meds. Also, some of them are geared toward older patients." "But 2 to 3 weeks with your parents?" Eric sniffed. Heather managed a little grin. "I mean, there have to be similar opportunities here in the Bay Area." Heather sighed. "There are, but some of them with better success rates actually only take patients who have a better chance at success, so the rates are kind of skewed."
This is Chico author Emily Gallo reading from her latest book, Out of Ukraine. And the husband, Eric, is surprised at the low success rate, and I was too. I would have expected a higher success rate.
Yeah, I was surprised also, but that's what it says.
So your daughter and son-in-law do this same research and are finding this is kind of discouraging.
Yes. I mean, a lot of it was discouraging all the way through, but they got...
Now, you mentioned that you and your son, in reality, go to Ukraine, but in your book, we know why the wife doesn't go, and but so did you? Your the mother of this baby could not go, or just chose not to.
She has some physical issues that made it a hard thing with COVID and all of that. So
with COVID, the mother goes with her son to Ukraine.
Correct. Yeah.
So what happens when they get to Ukraine?
Well, they get there a couple of days before the baby's born. Actually, had thought they'd have more time, but she came a little bit early. They enjoyed themselves looking at the city of Kyiv, which is large. I think it was 2.5 million people or something.
And we as the reader, we're kind of in suspense. Well, when is this baby going to be born? And where are they going to live? And how are they going to manage? And so we are in suspense when when we're waiting with this with the mother and son for this baby to be born.
Right. And there's some description of the shopping, which I found to be very, very difficult because everything's in Ukraine. I mean, I would have thought there'd be some more English translation than there was in the grocery store, for example.
Well, and something else that surprised me is, I guess I never thought about what's the monetary unit in Ukraine. I was surprised that I'd never heard of this monetary unit.
Me neither.
Can you even pronounce it? It has a bunch of consonants in it.
I know.
And I don't think I could even pronounce this monetary unit. You don't. It doesn't come up until later in the book.
Yeah,
actually,
was that the krivno?
Yeah. Well, it's spelled, so I don't know how to pronounce it. HYRVNIA. That's the Ukrainian money.
I couldn't tell you either.
So we
used credit cards mostly.
I was
mostly.
Just going to say, yeah, that would come in handy. Okay, so off you go. Before, you mentioned in your book, this couple has had a baby before, and you include in chapter 3 kind of a recap, not recap exactly, but you go back to a book that you wrote about a place in the San Francisco Bay Area that those of us who read your book, The Columbarium, they're going back to the Columbarium.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world is a Columbarium? Oh, I did remember. Absolutely. Yeah, it's quite memorable. Yeah. But for listeners who have not read your book, The Columbarium, what was that? What is that? Because it's a real place.
The Columbarium is a huge, beautiful, beautiful building in San Francisco. There are columbariums everywhere, by the way, but this building is really special.
And I'll bet people who ride by and say, oh, there's a pretty building, and have no idea.
Right. There's a little sign. That's about it on the fence. But the columbarium is a place as niches where people put urns, but, you know, with the ashes of their loved ones. But in the columbarium, maybe because it's San Francisco, there's some very fascinating things that go in the niches. And, you know, that they put it's not just an urn, they put the
And it's not just ashes.
In,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
They can put other objects that are meaningful to the family and to that person.
That's right. And, you know, in fact, Mr. Haight of Haight Ashbury is buried there along with a lot of other famous people. But
well, I imagine that maybe that's why you had this couple lose a child. So their first child's ashes are in the columbarium. So I thought, that's why she did that.
That's right. And they're in the first book, The Columbarium. This couple is actually in the book.
And do they really call some of these niches apartments?
So in the columbarium book, Jed is the name of my character, mm-hmm. who's a caretaker.
Who recurs in this book.
Right. And there is actually a person there. That's how I got this idea. Name is not Jed, and he's a very different person. But there is a caretaker there. So I kind of incorporated all that into the book, and as you say, it's in this book as well.
Well, he's a very sympathetic character. We, as a reader,
I love Jed. He's in a lot of my books.
yeah. As a reader, I really liked Jed too.
Yeah.
So they go by there, and you and your characters, mother and son, go to Ukraine, and this baby is born, and this is really nice because how did they find out about the baby being born?
Well, they get an immediate text that it's time to go to the hospital, but it's COVID. So they had to be tested before they could get to the hospital. But in Ukraine, unlike here in America, they come to your house. That's absolutely true because we had to do that. Right away, I mean, it was the middle of the night, and they came right to the house and did the COVID test, and you get the results not 4 days later or whatever, but within about an hour later that we got the results. They just text them to you. And then you can bring that to the hospital and show them that you've been tested. And that's...
So people who travel during COVID, I happen to be one of those people, know how this comes up. You have to be tested. Every time you turn around, you have to be tested for COVID if you're traveling during that time. So that was an added layer of, if I want to call it inconvenience, that you and your son had to endure, and your two characters, mother and son, had to endure.
Every time they went anywhere, they had to be tested. It was definitely a pain.
Well, now, were you longer in Ukraine than you expected to be?
Oh, yeah. We were there 6 weeks, and this was obviously before the war. It was only because of COVID that mm-hmm. when we were there in 21, everything just took forever, and things were closed. And even in the States, it was hard to get. I mean, that was a true thing I put in the beginning mm-hmm. about her. She had to get a certain piece of paper, and it had to be out of Florida because they were closed, this place in California that you could get it. So it was difficult.
My guest is author Emily Gallo. Her latest book is Out of Ukraine. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Chico author Emily Gallo, who has written a book that is fiction, but it's based on a true story. The title of the book is Out of Ukraine. And you were there in Ukraine yourself during COVID, and you had all these extra inconveniences because
including
of COVID.
Including February and weather, I must
yeah.
add.
Yes,
it
yes.
was very cold and icy. And
so that part was realistic also for you and your characters. But now you mentioned in the story, the characters are thinking, you know, I think something's going on, that the Ukrainians are acting like, nothing's going on, we're okay. And yet the impression you were getting from the United States is, ooh, there's going to be some trouble brewing.
Yeah, and I think we all can probably remember that with, you know, we're hearing all about Russian tanks and mm-hmm. soldiers in the north and the south and the east, and they're all thinking like nothing's wrong. And, you know, we actually stayed in touch with the surrogate. Mm-hmm. So a year later, we were still in touch with her. And so we got some firsthand information about what it was like during the war when she was.
Well, another reason that I'm glad I read your book, I wish I'd read it sooner, because in your story, the woman is interacting with this Russian woman. And I had the experience here in Chico of, I was going to hire this woman with a Russian. And she was a very nice person, but she didn't react. I was supposed to meet her, and you expect somebody to smile and say hi or something. And I got this no smile. So if I thought, oh, if I had read Emily's book, I wouldn't have been surprised. I wouldn't have taken it personally, for example.
Yeah, and I want to say that our surrogate was not like that at all.
Yes.
She was wonderful, just fantastic. But I just felt that the people there, I mean, they were very unhelpful in the grocery store there and in the hospital. And it was a very, definitely a not smiley warm at all.
Yeah. So maybe that's helpful if somebody happens to travel
yeah,
over
right.
to say Russia
well,
or
I
Ukraine.
I don't think they'll be going to Russia or Ukraine right now.
No, I wouldn't expect so. Well, the mother in this story often refers to things that, I really identify with that. For example, she's talking about, she doesn't want to acquire things. She wants to reduce stuff.
Right.
And
right.
this comes up in your story.
Well, we are of that age.
Yeah. You don't want to acquire more stuff. You want to reduce stuff. But when they're there, there's a lot of stuff that they have to haul around because they've got a baby to take care of.
Right. We had one suitcase was just all baby stuff, you know.
Well, one thing that was really nice is this sweet mother was going to give this baby her own milk. Now, was that the case too? I'm thinking probably so for you.
No.
You had to buy formula.
Oh, the surrogate,
the
yes.
Surrogate,
oh, that
yeah.
was true. I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead to another scene. Yes. No, she did, and because she could come. I mean, we were there 6 weeks, not escaping the war. She came every, 4 or 5 days with frozen milk, came by taxi. I mean, we paid for her taxi, but she didn't want to take any money for the milk at all. So JoJo did get breast milk at the beginning of her life.
Sweet little baby gets his own, the milk from the mother, the surrogate.
The surrogate, and,
yeah. That was very sweet, too. I thought that was sweet. Why don't you read us a little bit more from your book, Emily? For example, well, there's the drama in this comes up, and we learn what they're going through. And, for example, this on page 157, chapter 18 starts, "The screech of sirens broke out just before dawn."
They had to leave Kyiv because they closed the embassy and they needed to get the birth certificate. They needed to get the passport for the baby or they couldn't leave.
Now, was this true? You had to get...
No.
Okay.
Well, we had trouble just because of COVID, but...
Yeah, but you got a birth certificate and...
Yeah, okay. But it took that time. Yeah. But they ended up having to go in the book because mm-hmm. I do know that they closed the embassy in Kyiv during mm-hmm. the war.
Yeah.
They went to Lviv, which is in the western part of the state, so the Russians weren't there right away. So... This actually is taking place in
Lviv. And reading your book also, when I'm listening to the news now from Ukraine, I remember the name of that city. It was in Emily's book.
That's right.
So
that's right.
This has piqued my interest in current events, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the screech of sirens.
So Abby woke up screaming, "Oh, my God." Jillian joined in the wailing. Jillian is the baby's name. And Eric instinctively jumped out of bed to go to her. He grabbed her and went to the window to see people rushing outside and down the street. "I guess we need to get to that shelter." "Do we just go and leave our stuff here?" Abby cried. Eric shrugged. "There's no time. Just grab formula and bottles of water as I get her ready." They rushed around the room, occasionally getting in each other's way as Abby threw her computer and phone into her bag, along with formula, water, bottles, and diapers. They ran out the door and soon joined the other guests scrambling out of the hotel lobby. They didn't need to figure out how to get to the shelter. They just followed the throngs who were being herded with shouts and gesticulations by someone who seemed to know what to do. Eric caught up to the man. "Do you speak English?" "Come with us," he answered. "Are they bombing Lviv?" Eric asked. "Near, not right here." Abby and Jillian caught up just as he again rushed forward. "What did he say?" she asked. "Some bombs have gone off near town."
So just to pause for just a second, to remind the listeners that Jillian is the baby's name. So there are three of them now who are having to make their way around. And in the book, after a few hours, people started getting restless and there was murmuring because they don't speak Ukraine.
So they don't know
they
what's going on
yeah,
at all.
Yeah. So why don't you pick up there where Abby and Eric are trying to figure out what people are saying.
Okay. Abby and Eric tried to decipher what people were saying by holding up his phone, hoping the translator app would pick up the words and put them into English. A child about 12 came over to Eric and asked in Ukrainian what he was doing. "I'm American," Eric began, faltering as he tried to explain himself. "Oh, speak English?" the boy responded. "Yes, do you?" "I learn in school." "Not good." "Can you tell me what everyone is talking about? I'm trying to translate with my phone all the talk about sirens." The boy looked at him quizzically. "The sirens mean bombs." "I know. I wondered if there was any more news about the bombs. Are they hitting Lviv?" "Near here." "Are you from Lviv?" The boy shook his head. "Odessa. I come with mother and sister. Father stay there to fight." "Why you here?" Eric pointed to Abby and Jillian. "My baby was born in Kyiv. We are trying to take her home to America."
Let me interrupt just a second, because here this young 12-year-old boy, about 12 years old, is saying that his dad could not go with them because he had to stay and fight.
I think it was 18 to 60 were the age, somewhere around there, the ages that all men had to stay in Ukraine to fight.
Yeah, I think people will remember that fact of Ukraine. So you have your characters meet this 12-year-old boy who speaks a little bit of English, and so he's curious, why'd you have a baby? Okay, pick up there.
"Why you have baby in Kyiv?" Eric smiled. What should he say? Certainly he couldn't go into the whole story with a young boy. My wife couldn't have a baby herself. Oh, so you adopt baby here? Not exactly. The boy looked at Abby and then said, your wife too old to have baby. Eric laughed hard at that one. That's my mother. The boy smiled. Not wife? My wife couldn't come because she had COVID. The boy nodded. Finally, he seemed to understand something. Eric noticed that some people were packing up their things and walking toward the stairs, and a woman was waving at the boy. I think we go now. Are you staying in Lviv? The boy shrugged. I don't know. We wait here for now. Could you ask your mother if it's safe to leave now? The boy ran up to his mother and then ran back. She say we're not here, but coming.
This is Chico author Emily Gallo. She's reading from Out of Ukraine. And this scene here is panicky enough. But there's a scene that I sometimes have had just moments of maybe I'm traveling with somebody and we get separated and I wonder, how am I going to get in touch with this person? Because one thing, your characters have phones. They can text each other. But Emily, you know what? I kept worrying about how they're going to charge these phones.
And sure enough, it's a problem, isn't it?
I would think so, but you don't mention it very often. I think, gosh, I would be panicking about every page. Where's the next place I can charge my phone?
Well, I have to tell you, just as a little aside, I bought on Amazon a little charger that I carry with me now in my purse everywhere I go because very problem. But the hardest thing, too, in the book, I'm just going to mention it because I don't know that we're going to read any of it, but they had to have formula in diapers.
Yeah.
I mean, forget clean clothes. That's out of the question. And
they couldn't keep hauling around all this stuff because they didn't know how they were going to get transportation one place to the next. So maybe there wouldn't be room in the car for all their stuff.
And keep in mind, it's winter and really cold and icy.
Yeah. Well, why don't you read us that scene where she gets separated from Eric and just,
Okay. Okay, they're together, and she says, we're almost there, sweet baby, Abby said soothingly, pulling Jillian away from her body and rocking her gently. After a few seconds, she looked up again and found that Eric had been swallowed by the mob around them. She panicked. Eric! Mom? He shouted back. He looked around, but he kept getting pushed further and further away from where they had been standing together by the sea of people. Eric! Abby screamed, but her voice was drowned out by the roar of the crowd. In this pure desperation, she was no longer given any courtesy that carrying Jillian had offered, but was being elbowed and jostled just like everyone else. Jillian was screaming too, but so were countless other children and babies. She tried to stand her ground, but felt like she was being pushed back. She could not wait for Eric to find her. It was imperative that she got to the border. I'm just going to stop here. They're on their way to the Polish border.
Yes. Yeah.
To get out of Ukraine.
Yeah, to get out of Ukraine, and that was their option. And a lot of people, as you see, and as you read in the book, a lot of people are trying to get to Poland.
Right. It was imperative that she get to the border where there would be guards and soldiers and, with any luck, maybe even someone from the American embassy. She started pushing forward and hoped Eric would do the same. Eric was frantic as well, but he felt that it was more important to find Abby and Jillian, so he tried to get back to where he had left them. He finally got to where he thought they separated, but, of course, his mother and his daughter were nowhere to be seen. He then started in the direction of the border, trying to maneuver with his backpack and the suitcase full of Jillian's things. It was slow going. Abby, meanwhile, having been born and raised in Manhattan, knew how to shove her way through a crowd. She started pushing harder.
Excuse me.
You want to mention that I was born and raised in Manhattan?
Yeah. The author here was born and raised in Manhattan. And when I happened to be in Washington, D.C., and I thought, well, I'll take a bus up to New York City. And I thought, well, I'll just stand patiently in line to get on the bus. No, I learned pretty quickly I would never get on that bus if I didn't do what you were just saying. You shove your way through that crowd and you to get on that bus. So,
absolutely.
So that's something that even I can identify with.
She started pushing harder, but no one was giving her an inch. She started to worry about Jillian being smothered, but at least her cries let Abby know she could breathe. Tears of frustration rolled down Abby's face as she pleaded, prodded, and cursed her way forward, when suddenly she felt a strong tug at her elbow. Someone was trying to pull her aside. No, she screamed. What are you trying to do to me? She pulled away, but suddenly the rest of the person appeared, a woman with a plaintive smile and a teenage girl at her side.
Now, here's a smile.
Yes.
And I'm sure it has happened to you when you're traveling that you've heard this expression, the kindness of strangers. I have often been so touched by the kindness of strangers. So
and
I find
that
it touching.
Happens throughout the book.
It does. And I was so touched by these instances because to me, they're very realistic.
Yeah.
And probably that's what happened to you, too.
Yeah. Yeah. The woman held tight and nudged the girl, who then said, "We help you." The woman started pulling again, and Abby was reluctantly dragged to the other side of the road. Here a man in uniform stood, ignoring the pleas and threats of the refugees around him. He did seem to come to his senses, however, when they appeared, and the woman began speaking rapidly in Ukrainian, with the girl adding American for emphasis. The man nodded and said a few words and reached out to escort Abby as the girl said, "He take you now." The crowd grew more unruly as they saw what they thought was some sort of preferential treatment, but he plowed ahead and she followed in his wake. Abby turned back to see the woman and girl timidly waving, and she wiped the tears out of her eyes and blew them a kiss back. Abby's anxiety dropped a notch as she followed in the wake of the uniformed man. Even Jillian seemed to sense some sort of relief as her protests fell to soft cries. The crowd filled in behind them, eager for any forward movement, only to thwart themselves by their own gridlock of bodies. Abby thought of how to present their case and then remembered Eric had the bottle, the formula, and the diapers. She wouldn't have much time before Jillian would have a meltdown. Suddenly, they were at a gate and her mind was blank. The uniformed man spoke to a guard who then disappeared for a while. He returned with another guard. "Passport?" the new guard asked.
Now, that probably happened to you, that you had to have a passport. And even the baby had to have a passport.
Yeah, for us, that was our biggest holdup.
Well, so now you flew into Ukraine, and did you fly out from that same airport?
When we were
when
there.
When you went?
When, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
We did, but it was still, I mean, a lot of the problems that I have in the book that they went through in the airports were true just because of COVID, not even because of the war.
Yeah.
Like we got stuck in Istanbul you know, they wouldn't let you out of the airport, and it was really quite a trip even without the war.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So they want you to have a passport. And speaking of the kindness of strangers, my traveling companion once, he was picking me up at the train station, dropped his passport there at the train station. And this kind Frenchman had to go to a lot of trouble to track us down. And he finally tracked me down. He called various places. The last place he called was where I work here in Chico. And when the person answered at the front desk and they said, "Well, she's not here right now." And so he was able to contact us. So
wow.
A passport is something you don't want to lose because we were all prepared to have to find an embassy and go through all that. So you had your passports, but you have this new traveling companion that needed a passport.
Right. I was kind of surprised, to tell you the truth. It's like, she's a baby.
She's a baby. Yeah.
I mean, but those the rules. Got to follow.
So you had to go to the embassy there and get a passport for the baby.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it took time.
Yeah, so
we were there 6 weeks, and there was no war going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. passport, the guard asked. I'm American, and I know. Passport? Abby rummaged through her purse, which wasn't an easy task while holding a screaming infant. She finally found it and handed it over. He gave it a look over and held on to it. And baby? I don't have a passport for the baby. The embassy closed, and then the war started, and we... Birth certificate? He interrupted impatiently. My son has it. But we got separated in the crowd. The guard's eyes narrowed. Your son? Yes. Suddenly, a cascade of facts fell through her mind, such as that Eric didn't have the same last name as her due to her second marriage. She felt untethered, unhinged, really, while fully aware that the guard was studying her for false pretense. Oh, how stupid of me, she blurted out. I'll call him. Jillian cranked up the screaming as she again rummaged through her purse, and then she finally found her phone. She pressed the screen and flashed the guard a fake, frightened smile. The call went to voicemail. Eric, oh God, Eric, I'm at the border gate. Where are you? She ended the call and again flashed that smile. He didn't answer. He probably didn't hear it ring, you know. He'll call me back soon, I'm sure. I'm sure, mimicked the guard. You're American. Why are you in Ukraine? Well, she faltered. How much would he let her explain? The baby was born here and... Son not Ukrainian? No, born in America like me. No draft dodger. We're bringing the baby home to America.
This is Chico author Emily Gallo reading from her latest book, Out of Ukraine. After a break, Emily and I will be continuing our conversation. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with Chico author Emily Gallo, and her latest book is fiction, but it's based on true stories. The title of her book is Out of Ukraine. So in the book, Eric has an app on his phone for translating for him.
Now, Google Translate.
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking, because I thought that must have been the case for you also.
Well, it was, but... Me, being my age and my son, I wasn't that savvy with it at the beginning. Yeah. I got savvy after a while.
And was that satisfactory? Did you find it worked for you?
Some of the time. Most of the time, let's put it that way. But there were some things that, you know, because something was written, I mean, it's a completely different alphabet and everything. I mean, we didn't know what the heck
alphabet.
We had no way of figuring that out. Or if maybe there is an app for that, but we didn't have it.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to escape to Poland, and we won't surprise the listeners, and we tell them, yes, they make it to Poland. But what happens then when they get there?
Well, again, they try to get to the embassy. They can't get anywhere. There's all these refugees, and they're trying to get—they have to get to Warsaw, and they're at this small place, and—
And meanwhile, hauling diapers and formula and...
Or not, to find them. And it was an ordeal.
And why don't you pick up reading there?
I mean, they do get together, Eric and Abby, at the border. But then they get separated again in a car that they had driven, and but purposely with a plan to meet at the embassy. Mm-hmm. So... Mm-hmm. a car stops for Abby and the baby. They don't know these people. They just luckily stopped so they could get in. Remember, they're
with
standing
strangers.
In 5 degrees or whatever the temperature
standing
is.
Standing out in the cold, and this car stopped. But they don't know these people. These are total strangers. Mm-hmm. And
inside the car, Abby sat stiffly, clutching Jillian. Her purse was a burden on the lap of a wide-eyed boy in the middle. Up front, the older woman turned and gave the boy a sympathetic eye. She pointed to Abby, her purse, and then patted her lap. "Oh," Abby nodded. With a free hand, she glanced inside her purse. Her computer and phone, both filled with her contacts, passwords, personal information, would now be in the hands of a complete stranger. Abby nodded and handed her purse over the seat. The woman took it and cradled it as if she understood how important it was to her. Tears started rolling down Abby's cheeks anew, and the woman sitting in the back seat freed the girl's hand from her lap and took hold of Abby's hand. "Thank you," murmured Abby. Fortunately, Jillian fell asleep after the ordeal, and they rode for a couple of hours in complete silence. When Jillian finally awoke, Abby asked the older woman for a bottle. The woman looked perplexed. Abby imitated holding a bottle over Jillian's mouth, and finally the younger woman said something. The older woman opened the purse and found a bottle filled with formula and handed it to Abby. Jillian settled into a feeding, and Abby decided not to worry about changing her diaper. A diaper rash was the least of her problems right now, and she wasn't noticing any smell. The few words spoken seemed to enliven the girl in her mother's lap, and she began to speak softly, sadly. Body language or one-word responses were all she got in return. The girl's eyes fell on Abby, and she stared because she had someone's undivided attention. "Ukrainian?" Abby asked. The girl nodded. It seemed all of them nodded, ever so slightly. Abby wondered how the man escaped with the draft and all, and then she remembered he clearly spoke Polish to their driver, so it wasn't likely that he was an immediate family member. Maybe just a Polish friend of the family, or another driver making a buck and expecting to make a few more from her. She thought about her wallet. Maybe she had a 20 left? "Does anyone speak English?" Abby finally asked, trying to sound polite. "I learned some English in school," the boy squeezed in next to her said softly. Abby looked down at him and smiled. "That's wonderful. I've been so grateful to meet children who can speak English." The boy smiled wanly, not even looking at her. She wasn't even sure he fully comprehended her compliment, but she pushed on. "Are you escaping the war?" The boy nodded. "We left Papa. We can't stay." "What city are you from?" "Kharkiv. We take train." "Is that your grandma?" Abby asked. The boy shook his head. "We meet her on train. She know this man driving us."
This is Chico author Emily Gallo, and her book is fiction, but there's so much truth in it. The title of the book is Out of Ukraine, and I learned a lot reading your book, Emily. This scene right here,
touching.
It is very touching because I know how true.
Funniest part was that as I was reading that, I said to myself, "Don't cry, Marie, don't cry while you're reading it."
Yeah, because it brings tears to my eyes when total strangers are so kind to each other.
Yeah, and there's other instances in the book because, you know, obviously we don't have time for everything. Where it's just... Amazing.
I mean, some section, I'm biting my nails when, oh, what's going to happen here? And then there's scenes like this that are just so touching. Now, listeners probably know they do make it, this is not a spoiler, I don't think, to let the listeners know that they do make it back to the United States.
But not without more problems the way through.
So, for example, you want to tell us some things that they have to cope with?
You know, even just, they get to Poland, great, but then they have to get to Warsaw. Then they can't get a train out of Warsaw. They have to go to Frankfurt, and then they get to fly out of Frankfurt. And they finally get on a plane from Frankfurt to London, and then they're flying not to San Francisco, but to Los Angeles.
Oh, sure, we got a plane out of Frankfurt, go right to San Francisco.
Right, and then they get out of London on the way to Los Angeles, and they finally go, oh, we finally, after all this, we make it. And then there's plane trouble and weather, and they end up in New Brunswick.
And she's not even sure, where are we?
There's still a sweet part to it. Yeah. When they have no formula, no diapers, but they meet a lady with a baby who's breastfeeding, and she feeds Jillian. Yeah.
Well, these days with air travel being what it is, it doesn't seem that exaggerated,
no.
I hate to say it.
Even now, we're not even in a war. I'm trying to get to Maine, and it's impossible.
So a lot of this it seems very real to the reader because it doesn't seem so exaggerated these days.
And really, I did a lot of research for this book,
yeah.
So this is very realistic. There were, even though we didn't technically leave during the war, there were people going to pick up their babies during the war, and I researched, what they had to go through. And
yeah.
I mean, it's made up, but
yeah.
they had to go through that. The walking 40 miles in the snow
yeah.
and the ice really happened.
Yeah, yeah. So this book, we can learn a lot, and I'm sure you must be working on another book because when the mother, Abby, gets back to the United States, back to California, what does she do?
She decides to write the story that she just went through.
And I just imagine, Emily, you've got to write a book about this experience you had. You must have gotten that yourself.
Yes.
And
yes.
Sure enough.
I did.
There you are, Tin Roof, tapping away on your computer. Well, we'll look forward to your next book, Emily.
Okay. Thank you, as always, Nancy.
It's been a pleasure. Again, the title of the book is Out of Ukraine, and the author is Emily Gallo. And next, we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
St. Anthony, please hear us. The IRS agents arrived in the morning hours at Woodbridge Farm, there to find my father and exact the costs of his sins. Through the pantry door, they cut shadows across the hearth, displacing the light suddenly and strange. Finding that Dad had gone, they started in on her and on us. Just 10 and 13, my brother Tom and I were all she had, to stand by and watch from behind the butcher's block, hold the dog and listen, try to understand what was about to happen. The dish towel still wet, she clutched in her apron as they sat her down at the kitchen table, hand reaching across the breakfast plates. Words came heavy like shoes on wood planks, right to remain silent over remnant eggs and toast. I watched her still herself, as if in prayer. Underneath the noise, I could see her hands open in petition to find a way for her family. A lesson I would often forget, to still my mind when all seemed lost, to turn into a wind that you cannot run from and find faith. Mike Waltz.
Garlic toes. I think athlete's foot runs in my family. Sorry, dad joke. I just couldn't resist. But it's true. There were certain weeks during the year when my daughter's toes itched, their skin peeled, and when they pulled their socks off in the car, we needed to roll down the windows and fast. Yes, I have used over-the-counter antifungal creams on my own leather-skinned doggies, but my wife and I had reservations about sullying our daughter's feet with those same big pharma ointments. As usual, the internet had an alternative DIY solution for everything, including a plethora of ideas for crafting natural remedies for athlete's foot. Numerous websites touted the antimicrobial, antibacterial, and antifungal properties of crushed fresh garlic, though not anti-vampiral, as fans of the film The Lost Boys will readily affirm. Other internet blogger scribes attributed similar properties to coconut oil, which is also said to be soothing on the skin. Well, we had garlic in the fridge and coconut oil on the shelf, so why not provide our children's footsies with the best of both worlds? Fast forward. A salve made of coconut oil and mashed garlic makes a person's feet smell a bit like slightly putrid Thai food, and as a bonus, it adds oil stains to one's socks. Its effectiveness at eliminating athlete's foot is questionable. Eventually, the fungus did go away. Perhaps it ate its fill of dead skin and moved on. Or maybe it simply died of laughter, rather than from the so-called potent garlic toxins enhanced with oil of Coccus nucifera. It is also likely that the kids simply stopped mentioning their itching toes because they no longer wanted us to smear them with garlic coconut slime. The remaining 2 tablespoons of unused mixture sat in a jar in the fridge for 6 months before being found in the back corner, and then were added to the compost bin. Jeremy Miller.
Ode to a Canada Goose. You waddle over ebony basalt, past purple lupins, orange poppies that fill cracks in volcanic rock that's so rugged any walker might slip. Coyote, deer, human, bear, wobble along. You're not built for land, tan-breasted one. How do you fare so well here, stunned by life in the hot dust, so close to the crackling stream where you can paddle, swim, and thrive? Did hunger or wonder bring you? Maybe your black eyes revel in grass that's so emerald it nearly stings. Grazing bird who plucks algae from ponds, do unknown blossoms taste good? Lemon buttercups, cherry red columbines. You could grasp them in your beak, swallow them in bits, but you don't eat. Can you revel and dream of more than food? Take notes on the chemistry of sweet scents, hot colors, satin textures, round or diamond leaves. Do you create poems, dialogues with flowers? Ignorant humans need to know your mind. Translate wrong for us. Paul Belts.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.